Gloria, the speaker, preacher, and an alcoholic.
Amen.
By the grace of God, the power of this prayer from the 12 steps is outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I haven't found it necessary to take a drink or inject methamphetamine since July 21st of the year 2000. For that, I'm eternally grateful. I speak like that because that's how I spoke when I got here. You know that I've slowed down a little bit. God willing, the creeks don't rise. On July of this year, I'll celebrate 14 years, but right now I got 13. It's one day at a time. First off, I'd like to thank Benchmark Recovery and all those who thought it would be a good idea for me to come out here and speak this evening. I've had the privilege to speak out here a couple of times before, and I wasn't nervous till I got up here, but let me tell you, my one good leg I got right now is shaking pretty bad. I'd also like to thank the family members that are here tonight. I too have a family that I sacrificed. I too have a family that I raked over the coals, ignored, and compromised in order to support my drug addiction. My parents did come and visit me in treatment. They brought my children to me at one time, and but they never came back. You know, so for those of you that have your family members out here with you tonight, please be extremely grateful. You know, I have to tell you this, it's really hard. This is a family disease. It affects everybody. Today, my parents are extremely supportive of my recovery, but they will never sit in a room and listen to my story. And I had to do some work on that to understand why. This is my recovery. I'm the one that has to support it. It talks about it in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous on page 99. Wife, no wife, job, no job. There is nothing, nobody is my responsibility. So, let me start out with the way I was told to tell my story. On page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, each individual in his personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he establishes relationship with God. I will talk about my drug addiction and qualify myself to stand up here in front of you today, but I want to tell you that I have a higher power in my life who I choose to call God. This helped me do everything. And on page 58 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. I am not going to talk about it. That is a character in the Addams Family movie. I'm going to talk about a little old me. All right, so let me tell you a little about myself. I am the oldest of two children. My father is in the military. My mother was a homemaker. I was born July 2nd, 1963. I was born in San Antonio, Texas. The great, great, great NBA playoffs. The great, great Spurs. I'd like to ask, how many of you out here today are not from Texas? Do y'all understand the accent yet? I'll give you a big mighty hey, y'all. I have the honor and the privilege to attend the CA conference every year in California. I was a delegate of the South Central Texas area. I was also the conference coordinator, and when I get to the microphone, I say, hey, y'all, and everybody goes, hey, y'all, back. The people from Wisconsin sound really funny saying it, just so y'all know. But let me tell you a little bit about myself. I grew up here in Austin, Texas. I went to a school outside of Austin. Maybe some of you heard of it called Pflugerville. Okay. When I went to Pflugerville schools, they did a couple of things really good. They had a really good football team, and they had really good beer parties. And I grew up in the age of where you had that Farrah Fawcett hair day, you know, jackets, Jesus. That's what I had, y'all. That's what I looked like. See, I'm one of those people that I have to be a basketball player and a cheerleader, which I was honored to do, but I always wanted the outside world to look real good because I didn't want you to see that the inside world was failing. I didn't want you to see that black hole, you know. And I'm sure there's some of us in here that went through that real funky stage when we're 16 years old and we're writing all that morbid romantic poetry about the guy or girl we wish we had. Okay, well, that was me, you know. I did a lot of work when I first got into this program, and it took several years to get through some things. I also have another addiction besides methamphetamine and alcohol. It's called testosterone. I am your classic case codependent. I don't know if anybody out there is codependent, but I am. And for the men in the room, you can be codependent too, because that's who I found to hook up with. That's what I did. Because I got to take a prisoner. I got to take a hostage, all right? And see, and here's the deal. The way my codependency works, if I love you, you're going to be with me forever, and you're never going to leave me. I'm divorced twice. So when I very first started drinking and using, like probably most of y'all in the rooms, and I'm going to date myself, I've already told you my age, so anyway, Mickey's Big Mouth Beer. Anybody ever know that? Okay, now I'm really old. Boone's Farm Strawberry Hill. I used to steal sips of my dad's Falstaff beer when I was little. But the very first thing that I ever remember drinking on my own with a crowd full of boys, we'll get to that later, is the almighty MD 2020. So now this side of the room knows MD 2020. Oh, it does not taste as good going down as it, coming up as it does going down the first time. And the way I got that alcohol is the guy ripped it off. Okay? We couldn't buy it. I was in eighth grade. I was 13 years old. What I found out, though, is when I began to drink alcohol, things changed for me. I began to be a lot prettier. I had a lot more confidence. You know, I could stand toe-to-toe. And I also could be the life of the party for reasons that I won't go into tonight with the opposite sex. And, you know, here's the thing. My inhibitions were lowered, and I would do anything, okay? So this continued on from the time I was 13 until the time I graduated high school. And I graduated at 17 because I have a July birthday. And I always status date when I was in high school. Don't know if any of y'all ever did that. If his daddy had the construction company and a Cadillac, I went after him. And that's exactly what I did. I started working for that construction company when I was 17 years old. And I didn't get to drive a Cadillac because the guy broke up with me, but whatever. But I began to drink and use. And when I talk about using, I talk about using everything in my path, okay? I was 17 years old right before graduation. I went to a party, and I got introduced to some little pills called Black Mullets, White Crosses, and Yellow Jackets. And I found out that when I drank alcohol and popped some of those pills, I could be sober. Okay? Because I didn't want to be like the other girls in the room puking. I wanted to hang out with the boys over here that were still drinking. So that's where it came to mind. Is that I popped these little pills, that's all going to be good. And that's the way I lived my life for a couple of years. Okay? I have to let y'all know that I just drank. All right? Used a couple of pills here and there. I don't know when the line was crossed for me, and I can't put my finger on it, and I vaguely remember it, but I remember when alcohol no longer became a luxury, but a necessity. And it talks about in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, it talks about how, you know, there's certain things that we don't know. But what I do know is this. When I put that stuff in my body, I don't act like a normal human being. I'm not normal. I'm an addict and an alcoholic. I have a disease of addiction. And I'm addicted to a lot of things. Diet Dr. Pepper right now. Cigarettes. I've given up a lot of vices in sobriety, but those are two things I will not do without. No. So, anyway, I met my first husband when I was 20-something years old. At 21, I married him because we went to a party one night, and I got introduced to IV methamphetamine, and I found God in a U-100 insulin syringe. Now, I know the family members may not understand that or may not understand why an addict or an alcoholic does what they do, but unfortunately, they don't either until they come into this program and figure it out. And you're sitting in a really good place to figure that out. You know, I highly suggest that any family member get a copy of this book, and even if you don't understand it, just read it, because that's what we have to do. This will help explain what goes on inside of us and outside of us. You know, there's plenty of people to help answer your questions, but please just read it. It has a world of information. Anyway, so I married my first husband at 21. I was divorced at 23. I was married to him for a year and a half. Shot dope for a year and a half, and then I ended up in a treatment center because my boss's son, who was my ex-boyfriend, ratted me out because he went to treatment. You're gonna find this is the corroding thread through my life. So anyway, I went to that treatment facility, and I will be honest with you, it is a great facility. It's not this one, because this one didn't exist at the time, but it was in Hunt, Texas. And I went there, and I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous and another fellowship called Narcotics Anonymous. And I have to tell you, I went to those meetings, and I did not understand. I just didn't understand what they were talking about. You know, so when I got out of that treatment facility, I managed to start getting a divorce from my first husband, but I already had husband number two in the wings. Because I'm not gonna be alone a long time. That's not gonna happen. Okay. And actually, my second husband is the father of my children. He was also my dope dealer, because you don't have one dope dealer, you got several, because sometimes they run out. So anyway, but here's the kicker for this one, y'all. He wanted to get sober. So because I'm in the human repair business, and he wanted to get sober, I could do this by osmosis, so you're going to marry me, you're going to love me, and you're never going to leave me. Okay. And I'd like to say that lasted, but it didn't. Anyway, I got out of that treatment facility. I visited a few meetings when I was about 23, 24 years old. I got married because it was the ways of my misguided use, my using, my drug addiction. This guy's family had money, so I was never going to have to work again. I also got to drive a Cadillac because he bought me one. He also bought me lots of jewelry, lots of diamonds, lots of this, lots of that. So I was enamored with the lifestyle. I stayed married to that man for 11 years. I had two children. And we had the whole yuppie thing going on. He had a $100,000 a year job at the time. Two cars, a sailboat, motorcycles, show cars, this, that, and the other. But, as what always happens, I didn't drink or use for 10 years. But I didn't work a program. Because remember, it was the ways of my misguided youth. Solitary self-appraisal availed me nothing. Self-knowledge availed me nothing. That's what the big book talks about. Anyway, so I had, like, you know, the 2.5, doing everything good. And I will never forget, I figured out my husband was using because he's working third shift and he was a supervisor. There's no reason why he should be working third shift. He said he was just taking those pills, you know, the ones you find at the cash register, those little energy packs. I'm like, yeah, I'm not that stupid. So anyway, like the story in the big book, I had told him, you know, if the dope's in the house when I get home, I'm taking the kids and I'm leaving. And I walked in the door and I said, you got any? The thought crossed my mind. Let me put a little, you know, booze in my milk. There you go. What happened? And I couldn't put those words back in my mouth fast enough. He sent the kids to his mother's. I went to HEB because that's what you do. I try to avert. And everybody at that HEB already knew I was going to use because I was already paranoid because they were all staring at me. I thought maybe I should just drop a bottle of pickles or something, you know, so everybody quit looking. But anyway, I came home, and I'll never forget, I tried to postpone and evade, but there was no use. I remember, he goes, what every good codependent wants to hear, don't worry, honey, I can control it. And I do remember saying to him that night, we can't control what goes on in our body. We can't control what goes on in the next 5 minutes. But if you say you can control it, I'm going to let you. So let's go. Which started me using again. The first time I used for 3 years and ended up in a rehab facility. You know, the second time I began to use again, I was 34 years old. And I was a weekend warrior for one weekend. Sorry, it didn't work. Because it talks about, and if you stick around the rooms long enough, you're going to hear, your disease does push-ups in the parking lot. You know, you've always had the disease. Well, I didn't really realize that until I began to use again. I went back to using the same place I had left off using 10 years prior to that. Now, it doesn't take me very long to go down the pipe, okay? I only used for 3 years. I started drinking at 13. By the time I was 34, I had a 10-year stint of not doing anything. But my disease is progressive, deadly, and fatal, as another fellowship talks about. So I went right back to where I left off. Okay? And when you're wearing a size 14 girl's clothes, when you're telling your kids you're basing out red Jell-O in the kitchen when it's 100 degrees outside in Texas, you think you might have a problem. But I didn't see that. Because I had already, my husband and I used to the point that we began to manufacture methamphetamine. And I didn't see that there was anything wrong. It was everybody else, you know. For the first year and a half, we didn't lose a damn thing. Had a house, had a car, had the kids, had everything. The next year and a half, I don't know if any of y'all are familiar with dumpster diving. That was my backyard. That's what we did. I began to accumulate stuff. I began not to visit with my family. I began to drop my kids off. My mother lives in my same neighborhood as me, and when I wanted them to come out to the car, I wouldn't even go to the door. I would honk. On my dad's birthday, I'll never forget, my children go, "Why won't you go in and say happy birthday to Papa?" I go, "Come on, we gotta go. You know? They go, "They want to know why you don't even come to the door anymore, Mom." I go, "I'm too busy." That's what I do. That's what alcoholism and drug addiction does for me. I do not pay attention to the people that care and love me the most. You know, so I was drinking and using, and my husband left me because I wouldn't stop using dope. So he left me for another woman that did dope, but I wouldn't stop using dope. I really didn't care. He was gone. I had more dope for me. That works. So this is a typical day in my life. If I went to sleep at all, I would wake up around 3 or 4 in the morning, and I would begin to shoot dope. And then I would take my children to school. My children were the kids that always had to duck underneath the office windows because they were always late, okay? Then I would go back home and do more dope. If it was Friday and it was PTO bake sale day, I would go back and do the PTO bake sale because by this time I had to quit my job because I was knocking off too bad at work. But see, remember, the outside's got to look real good, okay? So I would go to that bake sale with fake tattoos all over my arms covering up the track marks. That's what I did. And they all thought I was hip, slick, and cool. Or I thought they thought that. And then I would go back home and do more dope. And then I would go home to pick up my... I would go back to school to pick up my children, but I was the one that was always late. My grandmother died a few times that year. I had so many flat tires. My kids were the ones always waiting there for the, you know, by the principal's office to be picked up. And then I would go home and do more dope. And then around 7 or 8 o'clock at night, I would let them come inside and play. You know, they were outside playing. I would let them come inside. Understand, I let them come inside. I locked my children out so I could use. My older son was in the second grade at that time. He almost failed second grade because I was doing his homework. It's serious. Yeah, I was doing his homework. Okay. He graduated National Honor Society, by the way. Yeah, Mama wasn't doing his homework then. Oh, no, he's just a little smarty. Anyway, so that was a typical day in my life. And I'll never forget that my husband came to my house with his new girlfriend and my kids and everybody was there. He was moving his stuff out. It was discovered that I was using again because he was yelling about it. And my father asked me what I wanted to do. And these are the words I said. "I don't know. Can I think about it?" It was at that point in time that my parents took my children away from me. Understand, I didn't lose the house. I didn't lose the car. I quit the job voluntarily. Things, I didn't, you know, everybody's bottom is different. When they took my kids away from me, I was like, cool, more time for me to shoot dope. Given sufficient reason, can I stop using drugs and alcohol? No, my kids were taken away. That's the reason. Can I control the amount I use once I begin to use? Well, as I like to say, I kept running out of dope, so go, I guess not. And I would go get more. I would go get more, okay? So, here I am. So for 1 week, I use and drink. And then when the dope runs out and the booze runs out, I call my father and I say, I want to go to rehab. Got to go to the same rehab I went to 13 years prior to that. Got the same room in that treatment facility. God has a way of doing things. And I went back this time, and I'll never forget, when I walked in those doors, I was so smart. And I said, look, I can quit the dope, I can't quit the man, so all I need is a whole bunch of therapy. And they were looking at me like, what? You know, because it was going to be my way. This was going to be my way, all right? And I'll never forget, my parents came to visit me in treatment, like I had touched on before. It was the only time they came to visit me. My mother was embarrassed. She didn't understand. And my father said he had dealt with it because of his job. They brought my kids, which I was so glad to see. They didn't understand either. But I'll never forget the look on my mom's face of disgust and horror. You know, and I can honestly tell y'all, I didn't get mad at her. I really didn't. Because you know why? Because she was doing the best she could with what she had to work with. And I appreciate that to this day. I appreciate the fact that she came to even visit me. You know, because she didn't have to. Because this is my second time around. You know? But I'm very, very grateful. And my mother does have a copy of this book, and she did read it. And that's all I ever asked her to do. You know? So anyway, I get out of that treatment facility, and I'm doing good, y'all. I go to my aftercare, like they tell me. There was only 2 CA meetings at the time. It was really cool to get introduced to CA in that treatment facility because I'm a methamphetamine addict. And it was really cool to see some guys sitting there talking about how he didn't get high that day. You know, because I don't know about y'all, but the mysterious he, she, theys, and those was always watching me when I walked to that mailbox every day. You know, the tree people. Anybody know about the tree people? The DEAs in the helicopter. There you go. Yeah. I figured out the DEA had a whole lot more things to worry about than the Monday. But in my delusion, I didn't think so. So anyway, I'm doing everything I should do. I go to meetings. I go to an AA club. I find a sponsor, which I'm really grateful for because she doesn't go to the meetings that I go to, so I don't have to see her all the time. And I'm doing what they tell me. And what happens is I'm doing pretty good. You know, I've got 2 kids. I'm trying to figure out life. And I managed to rack up 72 days of sobriety. And I will never forget, I get what I do know now is called the oh baby phone call. My ex-husband calls me, goes, oh baby, oh baby, oh baby, I want to come back home. Oh baby, oh baby, oh baby, everything's going to be good. So I'm off and running, boy. You know, but I'm not going to be there. And he's there about 12 hours, and yeah, we do go together. That's just what we do. And he stayed for 2 weeks. He went to go get a pack of cigarettes. And he left me for the woman he left me for to begin with. So here I am left with 2 kids, and I have to detox myself. So I go back into the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous. This time I get a sponsor where I go to meetings. She's actually about 6 foot tall, so I figured she could sit on me if nothing else. Come on, you know, like maybe just stop me this way, you know. And so anyway, I begin to work the steps with her, and I begin to have an experience this time, you know. And I'm like, this is pretty cool. So I managed to rack up 37 days of sobriety at that point, and it's oh baby, oh baby, oh baby. And I said, come on back. I'm stronger now. I've done better. I'm working myself. I'm good. I'm good. That lasted about a whole hot 2 hours, and I did it up again. And because see, y'all, I never really did step 3 when it came to relationships. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. I'll give you my undisciplined children in my checkbook, but I will not give you my love life because I can manage that all by myself. Because my codependency allows me to believe that I can fix, manage, and control any relationship in my life. That's how I thought. Because remember, I'm a human repairist. Okay. So, this time, you know, he's back and he stays 2 weeks. He leaves me for the woman he left me for to begin with. This is my turning point. I am left with 2 shots of dope and $900. I have a little bit of CA in my belly. I have friends who have been calling me on the phone. I know that there's a couple of meetings I could go to, but I'm too scared to go back to them. July 20th of the year 2000, I laid on my bedroom floor and I begged to die. I asked God to take me out of this world and show me what He had me do, but I could not stick another needle in my arm. And I will tell you what happened. The 3rd step in this book is beautiful. I've said it on mountaintops. I've said it in a room full of men and women. I have done all that spiritual stuff with my legs crossed and incense burning and all that stuff. Done it all. But that day, laying on my bedroom floor begging to die, was my 3rd step. The paragraph below the 3rd step says, and I'm paraphrasing, the wording was, of course, quite optional as long as we voiced it without reservation. that day begging to die was out without reservation. Now, I would like to tell y'all that the heavens parted and coins fell and the angels sang, but that did not happen for me. I have the educational kind of the spiritual experience. My tears dried up. I picked myself up off the floor. I called my sponsor. She said, meet me at a women's process group. It was on July 20th, the year 2000. The obsession to drink alcohol, shoot methamphetamine, and do my ex-husband was removed. And that's a biggie for this coach. I got back into the range of cocaine. Told y'all I'm codependent. Got back into the range of Cocaine Anonymous. I began to work the steps. I was 11 months sober when I got my first sponsee. And in that, I thought I was going to kill her, by the way. But in that 11-month time, I was able to become a part of a group of women that started a meeting at a club that I was able to help start. And it's Club 101. Club 101 used to meet at this little place off of 611 Carpenter. And for the family members here, thank God you do not have to go there. It was in the middle of Crackville. It was about 900 square feet. But it's where about five or six alcoholics and addicts decided it would be a good idea to have a meeting. At that time in Austin, there were two CA meetings that I'm aware of. I think there was one at the church, but I didn't go to that because that was out south, and I couldn't travel outside my bubble because I had two small children in tow. My children were 9 and 4 when I got sober. We started a women's meeting on Friday night, which is known as Stepsisters. And we started that meeting mainly because there were women in recovery that needed to bring their kids, okay? Because either we didn't have family members that lived here, or it was a good time. Friday, they didn't have school the next day. And all the little kids decided, you know, they all got together, and, you know, they had their own little meetings and stuff. But anyway, so I began to be a part of the fellowship of Cocaine Anonymous. I attended Alcoholics Anonymous meetings well because there wasn't that many CA meetings. I went to beginners meetings, and I was really impressed with what I was hearing and seeing in the rooms. But here's the thing for me. At 11 months sober, when that first woman asked me to sponsor her, I had to go to my sponsor and ask how I do this. Because I'm not going to do this thing alone, you know. And it's real fortunate today. You know, I sit in the rooms where there are men and women that bring their families to the meetings where they get their chips. I get to bring my kids to the meetings. You know, used to I would drag my kids to the meetings. Then they, when they got old enough, they didn't want to go anymore. Then they started going, hey, can we go with you? I go, no, because I'm going to be talking about you tonight. Anyway, I became part of the fellowship that helped save my life. It's about service. I want to talk to you a little bit about that tonight. If you have one day sober, you can help the next person that's fixing to walk through that door, whether it be tonight or tomorrow, because you got something they don't have. You stayed sober for one day. That's all you got to do. That's the experience that you have. It's called experience, strength, and hope. My experiences in this program is that I relapsed twice. That does not have to be part of your story. You do not have to go back out there. Trust me, it sucks. It's not any good. You know, I hear lots of people tell lots of stories that the drugs were still working when they came in, blah, blah, blah. Here's my experience. They weren't working. I kept trying. They weren't working. I kept trying infinitum. Okay? You never get as high as you do the first time. But when I came into the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous, I get a new high every day. And it's not from drinking Red Bull or a whole bunch of Diet Dr. Pepper. I don't wish those would work sometimes, but it doesn't really work. Began to attend these meetings, began to do what I did, began to be of service, began to sponsor other women. Started working with my area. We have the South Central Texas area here. I was a delegate for the South Central Texas area. I get to travel to California. I get to be part of the big picture. I'm lucky today. I thought I had a whole bunch of friends when I was drinking and using. I have friends all over the world now, all right? When you get to sit in a room with 150 delegates, and I'm making all these copies, because that's what I do. I make copies. I'm the coordinator. I do a lot of things, but making copies is one of them. When they go 150 people on the floor, you just got to stop and think. Everybody's got, there's different accents, or there's everything. You know, South Africa, Iraq, those people are sitting in that room. Norway, Sweden, all of this. They're sitting in that room discussing the business of Cocaine Anonymous, and there's nothing more powerful than that. Nothing more powerful. I had to delve into my sobriety and my recovery just like I did my drugs and alcohol. Because if I didn't see any fun in it, I wouldn't stay here. If I didn't get anything out of it, why keep coming back like they tell me? You know, I've had the opportunity to meet a lot of people. I've also had the opportunity to meet a lot of family members and work with them as well. You know, I don't have any magic formula. I use what's in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's chapters in here that go for that, you know. I can tell you this. The hardest thing I had to do was practice this program in my own home with my own children. I'll never forget when I did my first four-step. Was my first year of sobriety. I committed to do 13 more after that because I really didn't know how to do step 11. And I wore a lot of people out. But I'll never forget when I went to make an amends to my children. The first amends I ever made to my children was the living amends that I wouldn't drink or use. So I loved their ass to meetings. Because I lugged them to the dope house. You know? When they were a little bit older, I had to make an amends to them, and I remember going, okay, so this is what I did, blah, blah, blah. What can I do to right the wrong? Well, my older son goes, okay, so can you buy me a computer? Yeah, that ain't how this works. You're not getting a computer at the moment. Second, my youngest son said, I don't know what you're saying, Mom. All I want you to do is be okay. So that's what I did. I've just tried to be okay ever since then, you know. Since then, my children are now 23 and 19. I've had a lot of struggles with them. My older son is in the National Guard. He served time over in Kuwait. He bought a house in Hutto. He has a fiance. I'm going to use the term loosely. That's why I have a sponsor. I'd like to work on that. Anyway, I'm still their mama, and they're still my babies. But anyway. My older son, when he came home, I'm the house on the block that all the kids flock to because, of course, there's no dad there and they think they can all get away with a lot of stuff. I'm the mom that's in the middle of the room breaking up the fight. You know, can't do that so much today. They're a lot bigger than me and I have a gimpy leg. And I'll explain that one later. But I'll never forget, it was a Friday night and I was going to my women's meeting and they were in a transition moving from one place to back to Club 101. And I'll never forget, I came in, and there was a full Corona beer, top off, and my son didn't even drink the neck out of it. And then I opened my refrigerator door, and there was so much beer, I had to, like, move the beer to get to my food. So I calmly took myself to my women's meeting and did what I was supposed to do. I shared what was going on with me. And I shared that, you know what? I've been sober X number of years, but that hand to that bottle goes just like that. And I knew that I needed to share that with someone, so I did. Then when I came home and saw the bottle was still sitting there without the neck drink, well, first I was mad. I'm like, Jesus, really? You leave a damn beer not drank? Hot flash city. So I remember taking the beer, and I turned it over, and I poured it into the sink. And then I commenced to go out to the shed out back, which is their playhouse, which I want to tear down but haven't been able to yet. And I commenced to throw them all out, and I told them, you're not going to do this in my house anymore. I have boundaries today. You and your friends get your alcohol and get it out of here. The hardest place to work this program is in my own home. See, it's what I do when you're not looking. When you're not looking, am I writing that 11? Am I sharing with my sponsor? Am I doing the 10? Am I going to an H&I? Am I answering my phone? It's what I do when you're not looking that makes the difference today. But see, you know what? I could have went to that women's meeting and not shared that story. And I could have come home and my hand could have went like that. And maybe I would have had a reprieve and maybe I'm not. The book tells me I have no mental defense against the first drink. And I've been sober 11, 12 years at that time. But put it in my face and leave it there long enough and have me be pissed off about something else, we're gone. And I don't want to do that today, you know. Recently, my 19-year-old moved back home. Here's another story. He moved back home, and all torn up from the girlfriend. You know, both of my boys are codependent. I forgot to tell you all that. Both of them are codependent, and I can see it every day in their life, and I keep going, please don't do this. Please don't be like me. And, you know, they're trying, but when they got the DNA, they got the DNA. Anyway, he was all torn up, and I left him alone for a little while until I walked in one night, and there was a six-pack of beer sitting on my coffee table. I didn't wait too long this time. I immediately told him, that's extremely unacceptable. You're 19 years old. I don't know who the hell's selling you the beer, but get it out of my house. Again, I have the refrigerator, and I have to move the beer to get to my food. I'm like, no, this isn't working. This is not going to happen. You know, I'm the cool mom, but I ain't that cool. I am not that cool. You know, one of the things that happened to me in sobriety, which was very upsetting to me, was my older son was kicking his girlfriend out of the house. And he was drunk that day, and I was called out there because the police were going to show up, and he's in the military, and he can't get arrested, or he's going to lose his job, blah, 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 blah. I'll never forget going out there, and I told him, I said, please stop drinking. It's 10 o'clock in the morning. And he told me, he goes, don't worry, Mom, I'm not like you. I'm never going to be like you. I'm not going to sit in that room like you do. And I looked at him square in the face, and I said, you can say just about anything you want to me. I said, but you're not going to diss my program. You've been around the rooms long enough to know that, I said, the reason why you're standing in front of me today able to spout that mouth off of yours is because I worked a program. So you will not disrespect me at this point. I said, I'm leaving, and I left. The hardest place to work this program is in my own home. You know, the hardest thing to do. You know, I appreciate the support that my family gives me today. I remember my son telling me, I'm going through some personal stuff, professional stuff, whatever you want to call it. And my younger son told me, he said, Mom, I never worry about you because I know you pray every night. And I know you have faith in God. So I never worry about you. When you talk about your problems, I always know you're going to do something about it. And he says, Mom, I pray for you too. I said, son, I pray for you too, and if you bring any more beer in this house, you better pray real damn hard. You know. Kids are tricky. They'll try to use that against you. I'll never forget that. They'll try to use that against you. But, you know, I'm really grateful today that my kids did grow up knowing a program and knowing a God and knowing sober people and knowing people that had problems and come out from under. You know, the thing about it is that each and every one of us has a special hidden talent that we may have tapped into and may not have tapped into. Our family members saw it a long time before we did. We just decided to stuff it with drugs and alcohol, you know. I don't know anybody in the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous, Crystal Meth Anonymous, pick an A, that is not a successful human being today. If they're working a program, if they're doing what the Big Book talks about, if they have a sponsor. I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I have a sponsor who's worked the steps. I have a sponsor that I call every day now. But you have to remember, I'm with fallacies too. Sometimes I get too big for my own britches. Because let me tell you, my resume is this long of all the crap I've done in this program. And it's pretty. It's on some really nice paper and it smells real good. But I can tell you this too. I can also get really full of myself. My ego arrives a couple hours before I get here. And, my favorite saying is, don't you know who I am? You know? I decided that I really didn't even call my sponsor for about 6 months. I decided that I had enough sponsees. I decided that, you know what, I'm doing enough service work. I got enough friends that hold me accountable. It's basketball season. I'm good. You know? But I started having some problems personally and professionally. So I said, well, this will probably be a good opportunity to call my sponsor. So I called her and I made a pact with her that I'd call her back the next day. Yeah, I didn't do that. It went on for 2 weeks. And then I sent her a text message on her birthday. Yeah, that didn't go over too well either. And then I remember on January 1st or 2nd, I decided I was going to make a New Year's resolution that I would call my sponsor every day. So I called her. And it's lucky that I have a butt left. Because she began to chew me out upside down the other. And what she said to me was this. You told me you were going to do something. You made a commitment to do it and you didn't do it. What's really going on with you? And I was like, okay, but I told you. That. She goes, no, you think about this. You figure it out and you give me a call back. I'd like to tell you she hung up on me, but she just kept talking. All right? And this is exactly what happened to me. I got off the phone with her. I was standing in my kitchen, and I was completely dumbfounded. I made myself so sick, I didn't go to work for the next 2 days. Doesn't matter how long you have. It doesn't matter what your resume looks like. It doesn't matter how many sponsees you have. When you become disconnected from a person that has helped you in your sobriety, when you let other things, the calamities of life, come in, you can easily get spiritually sick without realizing that's what had happened to me. Okay? I can guarantee you this. I have called her every day since. I have been able to text message after 2 weeks. And I've been able to maybe skip every other day. Okay, y'all? This is what I have to do to maintain my sobriety. Hold myself accountable, you know. My family members, like I told you, my parents, here's the deal. This is my recovery. I don't get to shove this big book down their throat, and I don't get to make them like it, all right? But what I did get to do is lead by example. The longer I stay sober, the more confidence and trust my mother has in me. She was able to loan me money. Used to, she would take me to HEB to buy groceries because she wouldn't give me money. She wouldn't even give me a gift card because she'd trade those. She would take me to HEB. She wouldn't allow me to buy cigarettes or Dr. Pepper. I could only buy food for the kids. I could only buy stuff that they needed. I could have no extras, you know. And I used to get really mad about that. But here's the deal. She was doing the best she could do. And that's all that's ever asked, you know. Today, you know, I can tell you this. I was 7 years sober. And, let me back up a little bit. Sobriety is, you know, I hear it's not rainbows and unicorns. I don't like those anyway. But sobriety is not every day's a bowl of cherries, all right? But here's the deal. It's better than the vicious circle of chasing the dope, finding the dope, doing the dope, coming down from the dope, chasing the dope, finding the dope, doing the dope, coming down from the dope. All right? That circle does not happen for me today. But it's very, very easy for me to get caught up in the calamities of life, like I have shared, and let other things take precedence over my program. Whatever I put in front of my recovery, I will lose it, and then my recovery. Whether it be my family, my job, my children. Okay? Today in my household, this is the way it works. God, recovery, family. Okay? If I didn't have God in recovery, I wouldn't have the family. And for the family members that are sitting here tonight, thank you for taking time to come out here and support your addict or alcoholic in this room. Trust me, they need it. They may not want it, but they need it. And the reason why they need it is because all I ever wanted you to do was like me. Through my family, through my friends, all I ever wanted you to do was like me. You know? And sometimes the only people that like us is our family, because we've managed to piss everybody else off in our world. You know? 7 years sober, my sponsor decided that she could go drink and use. She called me on the phone and told me that. Now remember, my recovery is my responsibility. It's not anybody else's. What I found out was that day, I've been doing the payroll for a company. I've been a bookkeeper and an office manager since I was 17 years old. That day, at 7 years of sobriety, I couldn't do QuickBooks. I couldn't answer the phone. I couldn't do anything because I had put my reliance on a human being instead of putting it on God. And that day, when my sponsor went back and called me on the phone and told me, well, I'll know where to go if I ever want to come back in the rooms. And then I guess she thought it was funny, and she said, maybe you can sponsor me. I'm like, there ain't no way in hell that's happening. You know, because here is somebody that I've put lock, stock, and barrel into. Now, trust me, I have a God in my understanding. But this person going back out devastated me completely. That's when I learned, whatever I put in front of, if I put my reliance upon a human being and not on God, I'm going to get my ass in a crack. All right? Found the sponsor that I have today because I have it marked in the big book, the first thing she ever read to me. And I remember the four step that I had to do as I was very resentful against my sponsor that had relapsed. And she said, why are you going to blame an addict for acting like an addict? Like, well, she's supposed to sponsor me forever. Don't you know who I So, you know, I guess the point of that story is this. I stand before you today, a woman that has raised two kids in sobriety. I've been of service to the fellowships that I love dearly. I sponsor women. I've been able to have a life outside of the rooms. Because you don't get sober just to sit in a room. You got to give this away. And it transfers into everything that you do with your job, with your family, with your significant other, with your friends, with the people you interact with. One thing I was told in treatment is you might be the only big book somebody ever reads. What do you want that to look like? Some days I'm glad y'all ain't looking. But other days I'm really glad that I can share with you honestly. Because here's the deal. No matter what, if I get up here and lie to you, the only person I'm hurting is me. Y'all don't know any different unless y'all got an ESP or something. You know? The only person I'm hurting is me. What I've learned in the rooms of Cocaine Anonymous and Alcoholics Anonymous is this. It's about honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And trust me, when I got into the rooms, I was a liar and a half. Because I wanted to lie, because I wanted you to care about me and like me. And I tell you, I went to Taco Bell and I went to Burger King for lunch. I don't know, I just tell you, that's what I did. You know, but here's the deal today. I'm as honest as I can be, you know. And when I'm not honest, I get to take it to 10, 11, or 12. I get to call somebody about it, I get to write about it, and I get to move on and help another addict or alcoholic. You know, I do know a lot of people that their family members are in recovery and they have a child or a husband or a wife or something in a treatment center to this day. You know, and I think it's really cool when there's families that can recover because, you know, we talk a little different. We got a different lingo going, you know. And outsiders look at us and they go, why are they laughing about getting high and shooting heroin and losing their teeth and sleeping behind a dumpster, you know. And the truth is this, is that, you know, this is very serious. This is a life or death program. It will kill you. They told me if I stuck around the rooms long enough, I would know somebody that died in this program. And I said, no, that'll never happen to me. Today I know several. They said, if you stick around this room long enough, you'll know a lot of people that will go back out and come back in. I love it when I see people come back in. There's one thing. The newcomer is the most important person in the room. And the newcomer starts sometimes when they walk through that door all of their own volition. Sometimes the court sends them here. And sometimes you get to sit in a beautiful treatment facility like this, and every family members come and eat this great barbecue dinner, you know. By the way, how many of y'all, is that the first time y'all ever ate Texas barbecue? Well, it's all about sauce for me. And the jalapeno on the side. You know, I get to do these things today. I don't have to do anything. I get to. You have a choice sitting in this room tonight, whether you be the family member or the addict in the room. You can choose to participate in your recovery, or you can choose to dissipate in your recovery. And for the family members, thank you so much for supporting them, even if they were mean to you and nasty to you. It talks about it in the book. We don't know why we do the things we do until we get with the sponsor and somebody's going to point it out and help us. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous was the book they handed out in 8th grade the day that I skipped. I got me with that boy and smoked those cigarettes and drank behind the gym. You know. This is the book that tells me about how I'm going to live my life. It's a design for living that really works. And it works in all areas of your life. You know, my parents did attend Al-Anon meetings for a while. My mother said she kept having nightmares that I was going to use, so she stopped. You know, here's the deal. Each family will find their own way down this path. You know, I think it's really cool that you're able to be here tonight. Okay, go. Does that mean the Spurs are winning? Okay. Anyway, to each and every one of you here tonight, thank you so much for coming out on a rainy night to listen to a little old drug addict who thought she never would have anything to share with anybody. I don't care what A you go to. Find a home group. Find somebody that you can open yourself up to, that you'll love, and you'll allow them to love you. Become vulnerable. Get honest with them. Be of service and help another addict and alcoholic. Thanks for letting me stand up here.